Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are broadcasting from the beautiful Dillon State Park here in East Central Ohio. As always, I'd like to remind you to press the follow button if you'd like to be notified 1 hour prior to the start of each show. The music you just heard is called Return. It's from the Living Water CD. And I hope everyone had a great Christmas. Tonight we are going to be discussing chemtrails, the population reduction plan of the elite, and of course the Billy Meyer case. You're all welcome to call in. It's an open line show this evening. So let's get on with the show. Chris Maple and Paul Wittenberger have made a superb film called The Great Culling that talks about the chemtrails phenomena. I don't know if we are actually being sprayed. However, there is something that is coming out of these commercial airliners, and it's really not good for us or the environment. The damage to the skies can be clearly seen if you look up. I mean, this afternoon, we went down to the spillway area of the dam, and we're walking the dogs and beautiful blue skies. Half an hour later, you can see all the contrails and the chemtrails going across the sky and forming big crisscrosses, and I swear in 45 minutes or so, half the sky was whited out. So something's going on in our skies, and I think it's something that we really need to pay attention to. And this is our first little clip of the evening. Again, the movie is called The Great Culling.
There is a conspiracy theory that has many convinced they are slowly being poisoned. There is a movement growing worldwide by millions who are certain someone is spraying toxic chemicals on all of us.
We're joined now by two filmmakers producing The Great Culling. It is a follow-up to What in the World Are They Spraying? Great film on the geoengineering and chemtrail phenomenon. We have it here at the InfoWars store. That is director Paul Wittenberger. He is joined by first-time filmmaker, right, Chris Maple?
That's right.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We don't feel like the government is telling us the truth. And every time we discover that they aren't, we are verified that government is covering up too many things that are really important for us.
if you really convinced me people were doing this, I would, I'm serious, drop everything else I was doing and find a way to, I mean, if by chemtrails you mean a large conspiracy
yeah.
of government, I would drop everything else I was doing and risk my life to block it, because I believe that's the right thing to do.
I actually served 4 terms in the House. So after serving 8 years in the House, I went ahead and ran and was elected to.
Dr. Rima Labo is another person that is talking about what I keep hearing is the Great Culling. Dr. Rima Labo is living in the mountains of Panama, and she is talking about something. I guess she's talking about compulsory vaccinations. She's still of the opinion that at some point in the future, we're going to be forced to take these vaccinations. And Dr. Rima Labo no longer feels safe living in the United States. She's moved out of the country, and like I said, she's living in the mountains of Peru. The World Health Organization has decided that we have 90% too many people. And the World Health Organization has been working since 1974 to create vaccinations that cause permanent sterility. This has been an ongoing process. The vaccinations contain something called squalene, which is used to stimulate the immune system. And the immune system will start to attack the squalene, but eventually the immune system will attack all parts of the body. And this is the condition that's sometimes called the Gulf War Syndrome.
Dr. Libo, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank
Governor
you, Governor.
Jesse Ventura, thanks for coming. Now, you've left the United States of America.
Yes, sir, I have.
Why?
I do not feel safe living in the United
really?
States.
Really? Do you want to come in and sit down?
No, sir. I'd rather not.
You'd rather just be here so you can make a fast exit if you have
as
to.
As soon as you and I finish,
you're out
I'm
here.
Leaving the country again. Why? Because in a very short time, not today, not tomorrow, but very soon, we'll be facing compulsory vaccination under the mistaken term of voluntary vaccination.
Are you talking to me now about the current swine flu? Is that
I
what
am.
You're talking about? Now, what is it about these vaccinations? You think that they're bad?
Well, first of all, let's start with the fact that the World Health Organization has decided that we have 90% too many people. The World Health Organization has been working since 1974 on vaccines to create permanent sterility.
Doctor, the response is going to be, you're crazy. How can you say this stuff?
I show them the documentation.
Now, this is pretty shocking.
This process has already been ongoing. To make matters worse, we know that the vaccines that were illegally approved by the FDA contain a substance called squalene.
Squalene, an organic compound used in vaccines to stimulate the immune system and increase the response.
If I inject you with squalene, your immune system will attack the squalene, but then it starts attacking all of the parts of your body. What does that look like when you meet a person to whom that is happening? It looks like Gulf War Syndrome. It looks like every joint in the body swollen and intolerably painful and immobilized.
This is in these shots they're going to give us?
It's in some of them, but the U.S. government has a trick up their sleeve.
Which is?
Still ahead, the conspiracy shocker, a group that's even more powerful than the Bilderbergs.
What that means is a holocaust, a genocidal holocaust.
Jesse Ventura's investigation into the secret society that runs the world has led to this, a meeting at a remote airstrip with Dr. Rima Labo. The physician fled the United States in fear of the Bilderbergs' plan to use vaccines to kill off much of the world's population.
They will induce a pandemic using the nasal mist vaccine, which is a live attenuated virus. That means that if I take it, I can infect you. You're going to get the flu. Everybody around us is going to get the flu. Then the United States government, based on their statements that they've already made, will say, oh my, we have a pandemic. Oh my goodness, we don't have enough doses. So we'll admix squalene at the 90,000 injection stations that the Department of Health and Human Services announced that they will ship the vaccines to.
People lining up, sometimes by the hundreds, for an H1N1 flu shot.
What that means is a holocaust, a genocidal holocaust. Men and women will sicken and die, and those who survive will be infertile.
Well, there you go, Dr. Rima Labo, shedding some light on the great culling. I'd like to shift gears and head back to the Billy Meier case. And I'm going to play a little clip from Michael Horn's movie called The Silent Revolution of Truth. As you know, Billy Meier is around 70 years of age, a man with one arm, who's working as a night watchman and having a partial disability pension. Skeptics would have us believe that Billy is a filmmaker, a photographer, a master model builder, a digital and special effects person, and an expert on ancient history. Let's listen to the following clip from A Silent Revolution of Truth.
And let's just cut straight to the chase. And Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here. Billy Meier is a soon-to-be 70-year-old man living in Switzerland. Meier has one arm. He lost his arm in about 1965. He started to take photographs of UFOs in 1964. He claims that his first contacts with extraterrestrials took place when he was only a five-year-old boy.
That there is more photographic evidence and video evidence for this particular case than any other existing case. And it's almost so good that you're just like, holy cow. When he took a lot of this material, took these photos, there was no Photoshop. There were no home computers. If these had been hoaxes, his designs for these craft are quite interesting. These official contacts with extraterrestrials taking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photographs and films and everything else that followed, the skeptics would like us to believe that this man, with no resources, working as a night watchman on a partial disability pension with one hand, is not only a master model maker, filmmaker, photographer, digital and special effects person, videographer, metallurgist, electronics genius, sound recording engineer, knowledgeable about topography and map making, geography, ancient history, mining, ores, agriculture, and 30 other disciplines that he's brought to bear in terms of the information in this case. They will credit him with that, but they won't say, hey, the guy's telling the truth. He's the one that's meeting with these people. In 1958, Meier sent to the 25 European countries his about 120 specific predictions. The United States of America will be engaged in two wars with Iraq. The second war will be conducted under a president who is the son of a former president. The second war will lead to an unbelievable disaster. The end game is this, and this has been said even before we launched the war in Iraq, pertaining to U.S. military policies. Unless the United States withdraws from all military bases and from all wars and stops sticking its nose in everybody else's business around the world, there will be a third world war, which will eliminate three-quarters of the population of the planet. It will devastate the North American continent. We will be among the hardest hit. All of our major cities will be destroyed. We are in for a bad time. And I said, Billy, I remember reading in the prophecies that Russia is said, it's a high likelihood Russia will invade Iran as well as Turkey and then go into Scandinavia and this and that. This is all stuff allegedly published thousands of years ago before we even knew about Russia.
And I said, but now America and Israel are talking about attacking Iran. And he said, well, I'll tell you this. If your country attacks Iran, there's an enormous likelihood that Russia and China, which are becoming closer all the time, will attack your country.
And that's actually been spoken about as a possibility for a while.
It's already in prophecies that they published years ago that I even put in one of my newsletters. Of course, that's bothered a lot of people, but they should also be bothered that Meyer has spoken very harshly about radical Islam, Russia, China, and laundry list. He was also told in January 2005 that AIDS has mutated and taken some new forms that are fast-acting and produce from the HIV full-blown AIDS within a matter of weeks. Now, they've also said that there would be a cure for AIDS coming, that would be a vaccine that would either occur or be in development by 2006. I haven't heard an update on what that is, but with this problem with the new strains of AIDS, they've just said very, you know, clearly this is something that your scientists don't know as much as they think they know about most matters.
Well, I'd like to remind all of you that the guest call-in number is 917-889-7099. Perfect night to call in. Open lines. I'm going to be working to get some new guests, some guests also that we've heard before for shows coming up in the very near future. There's a group that wants a smaller population for the world. People are finally looking at the sky and seeing the trails. Others are measuring aluminum particles in the air we breathe and drinking the water. Alex Jones stated in the mid-90s that the jet trails that persist started to occur right around the mid-90s. They're very, very noticeable now. Like I said earlier, there's a really interesting movie out. It's called The Great Culling. This is from that movie.
That want control very much. Perhaps they would like to not have as much population to deal with. Most of it has to do with money, greed, and power. And these people are doing this and have been doing it for years and years now. It's really just beginning to come to the forefront. People are finally beginning to look up. I can't believe that for years and years this was going on over their heads and they hardly noticed it, you know. But maybe it's because they've become so bold, people have begun to look at what is in this stuff.
I'm here today to report that each of the six rainwater samples I collected contain aluminum. Every single one is contaminated. Shows contamination of the air we breathe with aluminum particles. It's a neurotoxin. Alzheimer's comes to mind. All of these childhood diseases that are burgeoning. I can't think of a worse place for aluminum particles to be located than in the very air we breathe. Can you?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe that's something that could be presented to Environmental Protection or the committee or...
The current program to try to actually change the entire globe's weather and to test how to manipulate the weather systems started in the mid-1990s. That's when suddenly ice crystal trails that had always gone away in seconds, max minutes, began to persist, even at low levels in hot weather or cold weather or at different altitudes. And you'll see trails right beside each other that dissipate, that are ice crystals, next to trails that don't dissipate and turn into huge cloud banks.
My name is Rosalind Peterson, and I'm president of the Agriculture Defense Coalition. What I did is that NASA kept saying, well, we have short-lived or we have contrails that persist. They kept saying, but it was all the same type. They pretended like it was all the same type. When I started photographing, I realized that there were different types of jet trails, and they formed different kinds of clouds. They produced different kinds of formations. Their persistence was different. So I began to document what was going on in the skies with this poster.
My name is Clifford E. Carnicum, and I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You know, let's go through these terms of contrail versus aerosol and whatever and try to make sense of this.
You know, the only consistent thing I do see are actual true contrails. It's the only thing in the sky on a daily basis that is, looks the exact same way. Every time you look at it, no matter how far away it is, no matter what angle you're looking at it.
There will be an uprising at some point in this country. There are 420,000 soldiers that are being set aside to deal with civil disorder in the United States. Dr. Rima Lebo has stated that in 2003 she had a patient in her drug-free medical practice who was the head of state. This contact told Dr. Rima Lebo that it was almost time for the great culling to begin. She said that it was almost time for the useless eaters to be culled. This contact told her that she presented herself as a member of the power elite. And this contact stated that the Bilderbergers were not at the top of the power elite, that there was something called the Council of Seven.
Massively from these inoculations, won't there be like a revolution, a rebellion, a rising up from the peasants?
Briefly, until the 420,000 U.S. military swing into action. If you remember, NORTHCOM, the Northern Command, was created not long ago to, among other things, relocate the population in the event of civil disorder or pandemic.
Doctor, what you're saying is that if people refuse these vaccinations, that FEMA's going to put them into almost like concentration camps around the country?
I think you have to leave out the word almost.
Doctor, how can you say this stuff?
Let me tell you a story. In 2003, I had a patient in my drug-free medical practice who was a head of state. And one day, she said, you know, it's almost time for the great culling to begin.
The what?
That's what I said. The what? She said the great culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G, when you thin the herd. I said, what are you talking about? She said, it's almost time for the useless eaters to be culled. And she said, those are the people who are consuming our non-renewable natural resources. I said, who are the people who make this decision? She said, we, the aristocrats.
This person you talk to, you're bound because you're a physician and there's the relationship that you can't talk. Is this person a member of the Bilderbergs?
She is not Queen Beatrice. She is not the Queen of England. She is not Henry Kissinger. But she certainly presented herself as a member of that power elite, and she certainly was a head of state. Now, the Bilderbergers are much talked about at this point. I said, who's behind this? And she said, well, you've heard of the Bilderbergers, of course. I said, are they the people at the top? She said, no.
The investigation is about to move into uncharted territory.
We are here on Earth so that our consciousness gains knowledge. We are here to learn, just as other human people on other worlds learn. Edward Albert Meyer learned very much because of an extraterrestrial named Thoth. Thoth taught him very much of his school-related knowledge. Pastor Zimmerman told Billy that he needn't be afraid of Thoth, and Thoth spent much of his time in Billy's early years teaching him.
Here on Earth to lead our lives because our consciousness must be developed so that it gathers knowledge, gathers wisdom, builds up love, peace, freedom, and harmony. The human exists in the material life on Earth in order to learn, just as other humankinds do on other worlds in the entire universe.
My name is Edward Albert Meyer, you know?
My name is Edward Albert Meyer, but all around the world I am simply called Billy. I received the name in Tehran when I was on the road, and since then this name has remained with me. I'd say, in and of itself, my childhood was very good and very pleasant for me. I learned very much on the one hand because of my parents, and on the other hand because of an extraterrestrial called Sva, whom I got to know in 1942.
How old were you then?
I was 5 years old. And this man, Sva, taught me very much of my school knowledge, besides many other things, just as Pastor Emmanuel Zimmerman did. Then I confided in the pastor, and he told me I did not need to be afraid. He explained to me what telepathy is. Whenever I ran off, Svart helped me to hide somewhere, or he took me in his spaceship, and he flew somewhere with me where we could talk and where I could learn from him.
Well, I'd like to remind all of you that you're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're going to take a 2-minute break and listen to some music, and you can take a pit stop now and refresh your drink, and we'll be right back in about 2.5 minutes. Thanks much for coming. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I'd like to thank everyone for coming to the show. I'd like to thank Ricky Dog, After Dark Radio, and Akhanre, I can't pronounce your name, sorry about that. Critifer, we've got about 10, 11 Anonymous guests in Janet L., RD47, Revel and Will, Rod and Creel. I always appreciate it when you guys come up to the show. And we'll continue the call-in this evening, of course, is 917-889-7099. There are some of the jet trails that evaporate just as they should, and there are other contrails that do not. Francis Mangles was one of the people that measured the high aluminum content of the drinking water. We see the sky turn from blue to milky white, and these increased particulate counts will cause some of us to die. This is called the soft kill because the kill does not occur right away. These chemtrails are designed to slowly degenerate us. So let's listen to this next clip from The Great Culling.
This is what a contrail is supposed to look like, Paul.
Contrail, exactly. That is a contrail.
That's a nice, pretty one.
Oh, that's beautiful to watch it.
Yep. It just dissipates at the same speed as the nose moves. The tail evaporates, and you know you need 40 something below zero to have that happen. You know, that's great.
It is so beautiful.
My name is Francis Mangels. I'm a master gardener, 35 years as a scientist with USDA, several degrees, for instance, bachelor's in forestry, master's in zoology. They're talking about the possibilities, but they're doing it already. And all these lab reports that are floating all over the internet prove that they are doing it already. And we have contacted the military, and the military says, we don't have to tell you anything. And click goes the phone.
I mean, how sad. Here we are sitting here today looking up. For the most part, we have completely blue sky, no clouds at all. And sometimes you can walk out of your home down in the valley in the morning and you'll see it like this. Within 2 hours, it's nothing but a milky white. The sun is not coming through. And it, you know, it started with a checkerboard that all comes together.
All of this can have an impact on the environment that we require for fresh water and even on your tree. So we have to think about these schemes that we're going into in order to say what impact are they going to have on the environment.
If we breathe increased particulate matter, more of us will die. And I don't know how to be glamorous about that statement. It is a sheer statement of fact. Increased particulate counts in the atmosphere will have a direct influence on mortality, and it will increase it.
Again, it's the same thing. Corporate shutout, military shutout, and the response has been that it's all a hoax, that there is no such thing as chemtrailing.
Well, they've got rat poison where you feed the rat and it doesn't know until it eats enough. It takes a week to kill it. That's a soft kill. And rats don't know, they just keep eating because it didn't kill them right away. If you give rats poison that kills them on the spot, rats don't eat it. They're smart enough when they see their buddy flop over and die. But if it's slow and it degenerates, okay, the numbers are going up, the government's trying to figure out why everybody's dying or getting sick, you know, why 10-year-olds are getting neurological disorders.
Because there is a war against you. There is a war against your health, because your illness is profitable, your health is not. There is a war against your survival because slaves have to be fed and it's often more convenient to just breed them when you need them. And if there is a war against your information flow and your knowledge because the best slave is the slave who believes he is free.
The goal of the power elite is to reduce the population of the earth by 90%. There is a council of seven men that is above the Bilderberger group that are making these decisions. The group of seven is behind the genocide. These people are working very hard to kill about 6 billion people on the earth. If we the people raise our voices, then these people will step back.
Dr.
Doctor, we're talking about some wild stuff here, extinguishing 90% of the world's population. Now, what you're saying to me is the Bilderbergs are not the top echelon, that there's somebody above them?
According to what I was told by this woman, there's a council of seven men, and they make long-term decisions about what they want to see happen, which country rises, which country falls, which economies prosper. And it's really important to understand that these people have no affiliation to a religion, no affiliation to a nation, no affiliation to a political party. They are acting according to their own rules, and their rules are not the ones that the institutions we believe in adhere to.
And you're saying these people mean genocide?
The swine flu is one catalyst. Remember, if you're a genocidalist, you have to work really hard to kill 6 billion people. As a military person, somebody trained as a SEAL, you know that the SEALs might be able to carry out the job, but you also have backup and collateral strength.
How powerful are the Bilderbergs or the people above them in the world?
Not as powerful as we, the people, in the aggregate are. When we raise our voices, every single time they step back. The problem is, the dirty little secret is that we have that power. They don't want us to know that we have that power.
Her warning delivered. Dr. Lebo heads back to her hideaway in the mountains of Panama. Her message is clear. It's up to everyone else to decide what to do with her information.
Well, I'd like to shift gears back to the Billy Meier case and back to Billy's earlier years. Sloth died shortly when Billy was quite a young boy, and I think it was in the early 1950s or so when Billy was contacted by another extraterrestrial woman named Asket. And these contacts with Asket lasted about 11 years. And Billy supposedly is the man that's supposed to bring our world into what the Pleiadians call the true teachings of creation. These Pleiadians are extraterrestrial human beings that live in the star system in the direction that we call the Pleiades, but still some significant distance from the Pleiades. According to the Meyer material, the vast majority of extraterrestrial races in the universe are human. Let's listen to our next clip here.
Any more precisely, because it was a long time ago. He was already someone who had turned to crime and who said that if he could one day somehow take control, he would do everything to be recognized by the people, even if he had to play the role of a holy person.
Man würde alles tun, vom Volk anerkannt zu werden, selbst wenn einen Heiligen spielen müsste, als Sfath.
When Sfath died in the early 50s, I was contacted by a female voice. A short time later, a young woman named Asket appeared, who then took up contact with me. And these contacts lasted for another 11 years.
What we're told in this case is that Billy Meier has been the contact person chosen by these extraterrestrial human beings for a very specific purpose, and that is to bring to our world once again what they call the true teachings of creation. The Pleiadians are said to be extraterrestrial human beings who live in a star system that is in the direction of the Pleiades star system that we can see in our night sky. The common portrayal of extraterrestrials as little green men or little gray people is part of a disinformation campaign. We're told that there are so many extraterrestrial human races in the universe that we would be surprised.
Often when people feel vulnerable or small or powerless, and there are times in all of our lives that we do, it's very...
I'd like to read a section from Stuart Swerdlow's book, Blue Blood, True Blood. This is chapter 3, and it relates very much to the Billy Meier case. There's a couple interesting intersections between Stewart's material and the Billy Meyer case material, one being that both teach that the human race began in the Lyrian star system, I think perhaps billions of years ago. I could be exaggerating there, but a great, great long time ago. The other information that Stewart teaches that is also found in the Billy Meyer material is the information about Emmanuel, who today we call Christ. But I want to step back and read this section from Blue Blood, True Blood in Chapter 3. The chapter is entitled, Is the Planet Taken? Because the Lyrians did not have a defense system in place, they were a sitting target for the reptilians, also referred to as the Draco. After being brutally attacked by the Draco Empire, the survival of the Lyrian society dispersed to other locations throughout the galaxy. The remnants of the Draco attack on Lyre are still seen by today's scientists. In 1985, a newspaper article stated that scientists are able to observe remnant waves of a blast that fan outward and emanate from a central part of this galaxy. They believe this blast to be several million years old and of such intense proportions that the wave is still traveling toward the edge of the galaxy before dissipating. They claim not to have any idea of what created the blast. These survivors went to Orion, Tau Ceti, Pleiades, Procyon, Antares, Alpha Centauri, Barnard Star, Arcturus, and dozens of other solar systems. In this solar system, the refugees colonized the planet now called Mars. At that time, it was the third planet in the solar system. A world called Maldek was the fourth planet in this solar system and was also colonized. The Lyrians were all blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, with an occasional red-haired or green-eyed person. In the Lyrian society, red-haired people were considered special, with extra sensory powers that connected them to non-physical realms. They were especially desired for breeding purposes. Special permission to breed with a red-haired person was required because of the extra or superhuman abilities that came with the offspring. For this reason, red-haired people were kept separate from the rest and even had their own subculture. They were coveted by the reptilians, who as a species did not have much psychic ability. Often, when reptilians came to a world for occupation, the Lyrian refugees offered a group of red-haired people to appease them for a while. This practice eventually degenerated into sacrifices to appease the demons. The planet Earth in those days was a water world in the second orbit around the sun. There was little land above the surface. The only intelligent inhabitants were an amphibian race that was completely without technology. The atmosphere of the Earth was mostly liquid. The planet definitely would not sustain any type of human life forms. The dispersed Lyrian descendants developed their own cultures over the eons of time. Even their genetics manifested differently as a result of the mind patterns of each of the colonies. For instance, Mars and Maldek were similar to the current Earth environment, with warm to temperate climates and an oxygen-rich atmosphere. The gravity on Maldek was denser than Mars, so the people developed a thicker frame and a more aggressive attitude. Eventually, skirmishes developed between the occupants of the two planets. Mars was rich in resources. The people of Maldek thought that they deserved their resources for survival. The Martian asked the beings of Sirius A from the planet Cahoon for defense technology to shield their planet from attack, not only from reptilians, but from their humanoid neighbors and cousins. The Syrians are known throughout the galaxy as merchants of technology. They have the best, even sharing it with the reptilians. So the Syrians created a defense mechanism located in the Mars underground. Mars is a hollow planet, as are Earth and Jupiter. Planets created with material ejected from a star have hollow interiors. As a molten ball is thrown from the star and starts spinning away, it begins to cool. The centrifugal force of the globe spinning and moving at great speeds pushes the molten interior to the sides, forming the crust of the planet. This in turn forces hot gases out of the poles to form openings at both ends. The molten core and gases that remain get trapped between the hollow interior plates below the crust of the globe. These are pushed out periodically in the form of volcanic activity. The nexus point on any such globe is always at the 19th parallel of the planet. It is evident on Earth by the Hawaiian Islands, located at the 19th parallel, by the Mons volcano on Mars, located at the 19th parallel, and the red spot of Jupiter, also located at the 19th parallel. The geometry built into the monuments on Mars by the Syrians and the Lyrian colonists explains about the 19th parallel through its geometric equations and measurements. This geometry is also replicated and contained within the Giza Plateau in Egypt. Anyway, that was a short excerpt from chapter 3 of True Blood, Blue Blood. And I think I will play our next little clip here from The Great Culling. I think I will anyway. Well, that's interesting, folks. I think we're going to have to switch gears a little bit here, and we'll go on to the next Billy Meyer section.
At Ascot, I traveled around and was also able to make various trips into the past with her and also into the future, but I don't want to talk about the travels into the future. I not only told friends, but also other people about the future, and some of them even misused that information and tried to make money from it and were sentenced and imprisoned.
If a person could really know the future, it would be probably an enormous burden, depending on what we're talking about. But certainly if you saw events that were going to occur with certainties, however that would be possible, and these were negative events, disasters, etc., that would be a terribly disturbing thing. Knowing that one could not change or alter that would be enormously frustrating. He claims to have met a man called Emmanuel. And Emmanuel, according to the information in the case, would be the man who we know as Jesus Christ. Or at least the Jesus Christ figure would be, according to the Meyer material, a fictionalized version of a real man who lived 2,000 and some years ago, who indeed was crucified but survived the crucifixion.
When Emmanuel lived, who was later falsely named Jesus Christ, and who never had anything to do with the religion which was made from his teaching. Emmanuel was not an extraterrestrial. He was therefore a human being from this world, begotten by an extraterrestrial with a terrestrial woman named Mary, and was born here on the earth as an earth human.
And why did Ascot present you to him?
I don't actually want to say anything about that.
What is the Talmud of Manuel?
The Talmud of Manuel is a document. It came about when Billy Meyer and Issa Rashid, who was a former Greek Orthodox priest, were led telepathically to an area outside of Jerusalem by the Pleiad, and they found and dug their way into an abandoned ancient tomb. The stones on the floor, concealed for a while, for 2,000 years apparently, resin-encrusted, animal skin-wrapped scrolls, which they took out and removed from that location. When they opened up one, they found they were in Aramaic. So Issa Rashid took the scrolls, began a translation process, In something like 7 years, he sent Meyer about one-third of these scrolls, translated from the Aramaic, in which they originally were, into German. He let Meyer know that he was now virtually on the run with his family for their lives. He told Meyer that there were certain religious factions of a couple major religions that found out that he had these scrolls and that wanted to take possession of them themselves. The information would prove to be enormously heretical. After Issa Rashid had translated a chunk of them, he took them and his family into a refugee village in Lebanon, hid the scrolls in the walls. It's said that within about a week's time, the Israelis came in and destroyed the entire village. The scrolls were destroyed, along with many of the structures and people who lost their lives. Issa Rashid and his family escaped with their lives into Iraq. And 4 years later, Meyer found out that Issa Rashid and his entire family had been machine gunned to death, ostensibly by the Mossad in Baghdad. For instance, Emmanuel foretold the coming of another prophet. He named him as Muhammad. He claimed that while this man would be a true prophet, his teachings would also be corrupted and a false and evil cult would be created from them that would give the Israeli people, the distant descendants, no peace until the end of time, unless, hopefully, both the Israelis and their enemies could make a conciliatory and honest peace with each other. The Talmud of Emmanuel contains prophecies about the fires that would darken the sky when greedy and power-hungry people would ignite the very oil of the earth. The Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered in 1963. The fires from the Gulf War that darkened the skies did not occur until 1991, 18 years after the Talmud was discovered. There are two artifacts that are shown in this book that Meyer discovered in the tomb where the Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered. The first one was a small figurine that Meyer says was left by the Indian healers with Emmanuel, the men who came and ministered to him over those 3 days while he was sequestered in the tomb. The other artifact is a piece of gypsum that Gabriel allegedly gave to Emmanuel. Both of these were left for Meyer to discover, as he did, centuries later.
When I was in India in 1964, I lived in the Asoka Ashram outside of Morali with a monk named Dharmawara, from whom I also learned a great deal. It was then that the opportunity arose for the first time for me to photograph spaceships, that is to say, beam ships.
Große Möglichkeit gegeben war, dass ich Raumschiffe respektive Strahlschiffe fotografieren konnte.
And that is my grandfather when he was in his late 80s, and myself a year and a half before I left to come to the United States to pursue my university studies. As I continued my university studies, I have forgotten all about that contact. It never stayed in a place in my mind where it is utilized. I went on finishing my graduate work, went to help my country, became a diplomat, was sent back to New York to represent my country at the United Nations, worked at it for 12 years. One day I was cleaning and came across the book again. So I thought before I threw it away, I should look at it. I opened the page and saw the name Asoka Ashram. So I was wondering, how could our place be named in this book? As I browsed through it, I saw the stories. And immediately, I thought, I bet you it is the same Swiss person that had stayed at our place when I was a child. If he's the person that I knew, if he has the monkey, it's the same person. So Wendell wrote to him, and I think Wendell said within an hour, Billy wrote back.
Well, that's from the movie The Silent Revolution of Truth. They head on over to Michael Horn's
website. You can find it at dayfly.com. I found that clip that I was looking for. It's called The Great Culling. It's the fourth part of the... That's another good movie you can check out on YouTube. It's called The Great Culling. It's about chemtrails, as you've seen. If anyone wants to call in, the guest call in is 917-889-7099. I'll tack a little more time on if someone wants to chat. Otherwise, we've got about 5 minutes left this evening. The genocidal globalists think that they own our bodies and they have the right to reduce the world's population. There are heavy metal contaminations in the food, in the air, and in the water.
And at this point, the corporatist, globalist, genocidal state believes that it owns your body, your mind, your choices, and your life and death. And I say, oh no, not my body, not anybody's body.
Like I've heard, just a sec, I've heard some people say they want to have some mass climate population. I think, if I was going to do that, why would I spray poisons from aircraft? I just put it in water or food. So I'm just trying to sort of understand the sequence of thinking that's going on here. People have an unbelievable range of motives, including enormously wonderful altruistic motives and enormously evil motives. So there's nothing you can tell me about some corporate alert person that I'll say is impossible, because I believe essentially any motives are possible.
I mean, and that's what I think was the fuel for this film, because once we, you know, kept hearing these heavy metal contaminations, whether it be in the food, air, or the water, it really sunk in as far as what a perfect way to control the population.
Well, I think we've got enough time for this last clip, so we'll go ahead and play it. Dr. Rima Labo.
IG Farben. Of course you have. And you know very well, probably better than I do, because Americans don't study this history unless they have to, that there was a man named Fritz Termeer, who was the head of Bayer Pharmaceutical, we say Bayer, and he was tapped to become the head of IG Farben. Why the pharmaceutical industry was that important is the subject of another lecture, and I hope you'll ask me back, but now we're going to skip that part, except to remind you that properly used pharmaceuticals are the leading cause of death in the developed world. No accident. Fritz Termeer went to jail along with 26 other IG Farben executives at following the Nuremberg War Tribunals. He and the others were in jail less than 4 years. He got out of jail, he got a new set of clothes, a haircut, a new pair of shoes, and went back to work as the head of Bayer. Now, the food must have been pretty terrible in prison, because he had a sudden awareness while he was there. He must have said, oh my goodness, we didn't have to waste all that effort on the trains and the prison camps and the crematoria. All we needed was to control the food. Oh my. And so he called together the other people who had been in jail with him, who were pharmaceutical executives, now once again running the newly independent companies that had been broken out of IG Farben. And he said, boys, let's write a letter to the UN. And he said, let's propose that the United Nations take over the world food trade. Hot dog, so to speak. And so that letter was written, and Fritz Termeer took that letter to the United Nations. 10 years later, which is no time at all in the world of bureaucracies, the United Nations creates Codex Alimentarius Commission, jointly run and funded by WHO and FAO. The next year, Codex begins its work. And nobody paid any attention. It was an activity of bureaucrats. It had no teeth. Nobody cared. Until 1994, when the World Trade Organization was created. And the World Trade Organization adopted Codex as presumptive evidence in settling food-related trade disputes. And now Codex has a stick, a big stick called trade sanction. And suddenly, people are paying attention to Codex Alimentarius. And the United States announces that it will harmonize, and I, in English, can emphasize harm. Now, who pays attention? The bigs. First of all, the United States. The bigs start with big pharma, big chema, big agribiz, big biotech, and big Medica. And whatever these five bigs want at Codex, the United States gives them, because the United States is the 5,000-pound gorilla at Codex, followed by its friend gorilla, the EU.
Well, I'd like to thank all of you for coming to the show this evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. If you're a guest and you'd like to be reminded when the show is on next, please press the follow button and you'll be notified 1 hour prior to the start of each show. Schedule is a little irregular at times, so we can't always meet at the same time every week. So press that follow button and you'll be notified. I'd like to thank all the regular listeners out there, and I'll be working hard to get some really good guests for upcoming shows, and I'd like to thank all of you for listening and wish you a very good evening and a happy new year.